Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network, your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
Thank you, Chief Iggy, for that wonderful introduction. My name is Mud Toe. This is my radio show. I meet with you all here weekly on Fridays at midnight, and we take a little walk through the midnight garden. Sit with me here underneath the peach tree and then among the asparagus. I think I used asparagus last week. I need to write down that I say that every week I try to use different fruits and vegetables for this garden metaphor. But often I, you know, asparagus is popular with me, so I think asparagus probably is probably a lot of asparagus in my midnight garden. So just about any place we might sit, there's probably some asparagus nearby. So I guess it's not inappropriate for me to mention asparagus. Let's do white asparagus this time. It's been green asparagus all before. I'm sitting under the peach tree next to the white asparagus, and maybe some basil or something. And join me, and let's commiserate in the midnight garden. We're on Blog Talk Radio, as you heard Chief Iggy say. That is listener-supported radio. You can go on our website and find out how you can support us. And that's it. That's all I have to say about that. I'm going to start the show off with some serious TMI. So if you're not quite prepared for that, maybe you wanted to turn up some music or something for the next couple of minutes. I have not had a bowel movement today, which is highly unusual because I take a medication which makes it necessary for me to know where the nearest toilet is at all times. And when I get the signal that bowel movement is imminent, it is in fact imminent. I have maybe a minute to find an appropriate location. And if I have been abusing myself, if I've been eating or drinking things that I should not have been, you know, that I know are particularly troublesome with the metformin, if I've been doing that, I might not get the minute. So I do have to be, I have to be cognizant of where the facilities are at all times. So it is, I've been taking that medication for 5 or 6 years, and I haven't had to deal with constipation. It just hasn't been a part of my life. And Iggy sent me an attachment. Okay, I'll have to look at that. It's actually happened a couple. Yeah, I'll say two times. This would be the second time since I've gone on this. It's not really a formal diet. I had at my last visit to my doctor for medication maintenance, I had a high blood pressure reading. And of course, the first thing is, well, we can give you this pill, and I don't really want to take more pills. And I know I'm not doing everything I can, you know, diet-wise to keep, you know, blood pressure under control. And I am getting older and all that. So I got to, that earned me a trip to the dietitian. And mainly what she talked about was sodium, keeping sodium down, lots of fruits and vegetables, stay away from really processed foods of any kind. So I've been working on that. I've been working on the more fruits and vegetables, and I've cut out the salty snacks, which, of course, is all salt, is a lot of sodium. Anything in boxes, I have a lot of them in my kitchen shelf, so I've been working my way through them and maybe, you know, making up half portions and mixing them with something else so they're not quite so bad sodium-wise, and then replacing and working in the menu items that don't have as much sodium in it. So I feel good about where I am right now. I don't monitor my – they wanted me to cut my sodium, and they wanted me to lose 10 pounds. And I don't monitor my weight at home. I find it's my sort of anxiety and obsessiveness problems. It's not a good choice for me. I owned a set of scales once, about 5 or 6 years ago, and a set of digital scales that measured to a tenth of a pound. And that was a bad, bad choice because, you know, I'm sweating, you know, oh, I'm up a tenth of a pound. I'm up 0.2 pound. Oh no. You know, over a period of 24 hours or maybe even 12 hours, and, you know, you weigh different things, you know, as you go through the day, you know, and I found, I just couldn't, I was making myself crazy checking my weight all the time. So I just decided I wouldn't do it. So I'm not monitoring my weight. I really don't know how I'm doing in that sense. But I feel good about the sodium. I was very bad about salty snacks. I had a lot of bread in my diet, which is also bad from the diabetes point of view. Having been pretty successful, I think, in limiting those things, reducing them, and I have had a couple of better blood pressure readings. In fact, when I went to get my antibiotic that so many of my friends were upset with me about, I was down to like 120, which is like almost normal. My reading that caused all that made me upset was 153, which is a high number, which is really all they're talking about. And I guess they felt the low number was okay. So anyway, I've had a couple of low blood pressure readings, so I think that's an indication that I may be doing well. I don't seem to be doing badly in any case. So I guess that's the only thing I can think of as being something that might be involved with this constipation is reducing that somehow that's entering into the equation with my metformin, and it's not flushing me the way I used to, which is, it's bad for a couple of reasons. I mean, I need to have bowel movements. I mean, obviously it's something you got to do. I'm afraid because this is something horrible, terrible, awful. Metformin has been pretty important. All that flushing is important in keeping my weight down. If I'm not having three or four bowel movements a day, is my weight going to stay below 260 where it's been for a while now? So am I going to have to make even more changes in my diet because I'm not flushing as often as I'm used to? I don't know. It's not an everyday thing. If it's an everyday thing, then I have to start asking some questions about it. But in the meantime, I've never really had to think about stool softeners or laxatives or anything like that, especially with metformin in my life. But does that become something? Now the other thing is, I'm sitting here with the time ticking down, to go on the air, and I'm saying, well, what happens if we hit 11:59 and then I get my message? Okay, you got to take care of this now. So what do I do then? Or what happens if I get the call? I hear the calling in the middle of the show. What happens then? Like, I mean, there's two possibilities. I could tape the laptop into the toilet with me and continue due to the show. Or I could excuse myself, put the headphones down, and play some music for you, and go in and take care of business. I think I would tend toward the latter choice, and I think most of you probably would too. I have this thing. I don't like people to hear me when I'm using the toilet, and which becomes problematic if you're in a public place, especially like a big department store or something. Because you're never alone in the toilet, and I kind of have to be to function. Although that's something that metformin has helped me out with too. I'm going to function whether I like it or not. I was working with my second wife. We did a lot of she made Southwestern Arts and Crafts, and we worked in a lot of malls and kiosks. And this one place we were working at was a big Sears, I think, and they had the restroom, and this was an anti-theft thing. They didn't have any doors on the toilet stalls. I mean, it's just you're just sitting there taking a dump in front of everybody, and I was just unable. I can't even do this. Fine, go to another store and use their facilities because I just absolutely can't. It was because people were sneaking stuff into the bathroom and then stuffing them down their pants or whatever, and leaving with it. So they didn't have doors on the stalls. I don't know how you could actually use those, how you could actually do that. I don't know. Confused me. Always confused. But anyway, I think what I usually say about things like this that have not been resolved is that I will keep you informed. But I don't think I'm going to do that. I don't probably not something you're real interested in. So I guess unless I have to go in and then get the colon scraped or something, I probably won't mention that topic again. So thank you for being patient with me and sitting through that. Got 20 minutes left. It does concern me too. I mean, I'm going to go 24 hours. I mean, if I go to sleep your system shuts down when you sleep. I mean, your digestive system shuts down, so nothing will go any further. And I'll wake up in the morning, and that'll be 24 hours since I've had a bowel movement, and that like never happens. Never happens. So anyway, I promised you I wasn't going to talk about it anymore, and then immediately I talked about it some more. Sorry about that. What else can we talk about? No writing this week, so you're going to have to hold me accountable for that. There's a million excuses, but they're just that, excuses, so I'm not even going to offer them. I feel dreadfully ashamed of myself. And that's that. Let me update you on this little story. I had my neighbor come in. This was last week. I believe I talked about this on the show last week. A female neighbor of mine who is in some way associated. Well, let me back up. She's not the female neighbor. There's a female neighbor who lives upstairs in the upstairs apartment. This other female is associated with her in some way. I haven't even figured out exactly how. She doesn't seem to live there, but she's around a lot. So anyway, she came in, and they don't have any water or power upstairs, which is funny because I have water and power, so they must have just not paid for it. But then at the same time, we share a hot water heater, so I'm not exactly sure how. I mean, you would have to physically cut off, you know, their access to the hot water heater, and I hadn't seen any people around, but I'm not around all the time. So anyway, she came in, she said they didn't have any hot water, no electrical power, and she wanted to know if she could use my bathroom. And she came in with me with two huge bags full of laundry, and I told her, I don't have, I don't have washer and dryer, and I didn't know if it was really a good idea to launder her clothes in my bathtub because there's really no way to dry. She said the clothes were clean. She said she was constantly mobile. She had all of her stuff in these two bags. All right, so she put those down, and she took them into the bathroom with her because her bathroom stuff is there. Closed the door, and she was in the bathroom for about an hour and a half. And then I always start to suspect what might be going on in the bathroom if the door is closed and she hasn't come out for an hour and a half. And of course, this always makes me nervous because, you know, I've had neighbors, you know, come in and use my facilities and then leave drug paraphernalia behind. And, you know, I don't want to, first of all, I don't want to have anything to do with that. Second, I don't want to, to be found someday if for some reason somebody was doing an inspection of the apartment and found somebody's crack pipe, you know, underneath the refrigerator, it might go badly for me. So I do try to be careful about that, but at the same time, it's just hard for me to pound on a door and say, well, what are you smoking in there? Mostly I just tend to, you know, sit in front of my computer and just say, get out. I don't want to, you know, deal with this anymore. So she did finally come out. I said it's about an hour and a half. She came out of this, by the way, is the same person who'd done a couple overnights at my apartment before, and I had trouble getting her out the next day. It's the same person, and I let her back in to use my bathroom again. Tells you how smart I am. So anyway, she wanted me to take her. She had some. She was supposed to be taking care of somebody's dogs. I think that was the story. She got to go feed somebody's dogs, and she doesn't have a way to get over there. So I take her over there, but she doesn't take, I hadn't discovered that yet. We went over, and I want to build the suspense. I took her over, and she just disappeared, you know, and after about, in half an hour, she hadn't come back. So I said, you know, hell with this. I went back home, and she had left all of her stuff in my bathroom, her two bags of stuff, you know, strewn all over my bathroom. So I put on a pair of gloves and I packed it all back up and, you know, was very carefully looking. I did without getting into it and rooting through it. I was on the lookout for paraphernalia because I didn't want that in the apartment. I didn't find any. I didn't dump the things out on the floor and look through everything. But from the stuff that I was putting away, I didn't see any. So I took it out, put it in the living room, cleaned up the bathroom a little bit, and, you know, just waited. I mean, obviously, she's going to come back for her stuff, right? This is supposedly all the stuff she has in the world. This is a Thursday night, and she never comes back for her stuff. Now, the next day, I'm going to be in my apartment on Friday morning, but then I'm going to my therapist, and then I'm going right from there to my mother and father's place. It's my father's 80th birthday. So just waiting, you know, is she going to come for stuff? Because she doesn't, I don't have, obviously she doesn't have a phone. I don't have any way to get a hold of her. If she does have a phone, I don't have any, it doesn't matter. I don't have a way to, I don't know what it is. And she's going to be out her stuff until I get back the following Tuesday. So I waited, you know, and literally until the last, you know, possible moment that I could, you know, reasonably get to my therapist. And then, well, sorry, I guess the you know, the stuff must not be that vital if you're okay with leaving it in my apartment. And, you know, when I came back on Tuesday, you know, she came and knocked on the door. I said, I've been coming to your apartment every day. I couldn't get my stuff, blah, 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 blah. What'd you leave it there for? But anyway, it's these, you know, these associations that are starting to wear on me. I've had a number of associations with people in the neighborhood, mostly females. And, you know, they give me the story, and the story is that they need me in some way, and that's what pulls me in. You know, I'm needed. I like the fact that they need me to help them do something. But then, you know, it's not, as I say, they've told me a story. They really don't, we're really not doing what they said we were going to be doing. We're doing something else. And my, you know, my suspicion is it generally involves drugs. And as I said, I don't want to be involved in that. So why do I continue to do it? Well, now I have this pressing need to feel useful. And that's been taken away since I haven't been working. And I think that has something to do with it. I think that there's the whole damsel in distress thing that activates me, and that certainly has something to do with it. But and I know, I don't know how this maps onto moving forward. Again, that's what I've said. I want this show to be about, is about ways of moving forward. And how do I, you know, how do I decide that I have in fact moved forward? And when I just say something like, I have to stop doing that, is that moving forward? That's not really moving forward. That's just saying that there's a behavior that needs to be crossed off the list. Moving forward would be, how am I going to stop doing that? And it seems deceptively simple. Just don't do it. Just say no, as the goddess Nancy Reagan said on one occasion. Just say no. There are, you know, deep-seated psychological needs being toyed with here. Just say no is not doesn't really apply. But I think, you know, if I'm correct in my assumption that it's a matter of being needed, that their need for my shower, my toilet, my car is what's really pulling me into these things, that I need to find I need to find a more positive way to get that. I need to be working again. And it's helped being back, you know, OSU is back in session. Excuse me, my large university here in the Midwest is back in session. And that means I've been getting some work from the medical school where I go. For those of you who haven't heard the show before, I go there and I pretend to be sick, and the medical students have to figure out what's wrong with me. It's kind of practice for them before they are turned loose on real people. So I've been doing that, been getting, have been fairly busy, although it's in like the last week. I would have expected this week to have received the recruiting emails for Labor Day week, and I didn't receive any, which means I wasn't recruited, or maybe it means they're not even doing anything on Labor Day week, which is possible. Often they don't do something on a 4-day week. But it's really necessary for me to be able to continue to pay my bills without dipping into my savings, is to keep that flow of events going, or to get a major one. That's like the big trophy. And you get one of their exams where everybody from a given year, you know, first year, second year, or third year, is doing it, and that takes 3 days, and it's the whole day. And you're making $17 an hour. That's the big score. That's what you want to have happen. I haven't had one of those yet because, you know, it's just early in the quarter. They haven't had any exams yet. But I do, they've been doing the classrooms where you go in and there's like 15 medical students and a professor and they poke and prod you and they demonstrate, you know, what an abdominal exam is supposed to look like and ask you some questions and you answer them in character. It's fun. I do enjoy it and I do feel helpful when I'm doing it, but there's just not, you know, there's not enough hours for me to make a living off of it. And so, you know, and by the same token, there's not enough hours for it to make me feel really, really useful all the time. I feel great while I'm doing it, but it's, you know, it's 2 days a week and some days not at all. Maybe 2 days might be one day. And sometimes you'll get the big one, which is 3 days. More often it's a 2 day gig. Sometimes it's only a 1 day gig. And, you know, some weeks you're not working at all. It seems like they keep hiring people. They just keep hiring people. And what are you doing with the people who have been here for a long time? But anyway, it does kind of keep my connection with the university too, which for some reason I don't quite understand. I like doing, university's changed so much. I'm not sure I even really like it anymore, but I am there and I like what I'm doing, but I have to find something to do in the real world that makes me feel useful and valued. And therein lies the rub, because 99.9% of jobs in the United States do not make you feel useful and valued. And, you know, I say that and people say, oh, come on, all that. But they're the same people who are constantly on Facebook complaining about their job. I don't talk to many people who like their jobs. And most of them are people who have, you know, have carved out their own jobs. They do something in, you know, making stuff or selling stuff or whatever, something that they're sort of responsible to themselves, the way all jobs used to be, you know, back in the day. Before, you know, we had corporations and all that stuff. Sorry, something came up on the computer there, and I can't multitask. So, and remember a time my mother used to work for her aunt at the root beer stand in the little tiny farming town she grew up in. And, you know, it was a family affair. You know, the people who, you know, own, you know, the patriarch and the matriarch ran the place, and the kids worked there. And Iggy's restaurant was that way, I understand, when his father owned it and all the kids worked there. And then, you know, the idea was, you know, as time passed by, you know, maybe one or two of the kids would take over that role of running the place. And that is, but it's an idea that everybody has a stake in it. You know, the people, you know, the kids, I mean, it's their living too. So they have an incentive to work and work well. And that has mostly been extinguished these days. You're working for some corporate entity that would just as soon fire you as look at you. You know, you're always, you know, 10 minutes away from your job being sent to India. Not to say anything bad about people in India. You know, they got to have work too, but you find that jobs are shipped, you know, it's possible to ship jobs over there. If it's possible to ship the jobs over to India, then the people who made the jobs didn't put a whole lot into, you know, what makes this job? Why is this job important? Why are we paying somebody to do this? And also, if they're paying, you know, they're only paying $10 an hour, not a lot of thought has gone into the job and why is it important? Why are we having somebody do this? I firmly believe that it's immoral to hire somebody to work for you full time and not pay them enough to live. And again, a lot of my friends go a little bit cuckoo when I say something like that. And they pay somebody behind the counter $15, some McDonald's $15. Hey, look, you shouldn't have people, you know, primary wage earners working behind the counter at McDonald's. How did that happen? That's a job for a kid earning money for a bike. It's not a job somebody's supposed to make a living on. So that's why, yes, I'd say I agree. It's not worth the $15 an hour, but you got somebody behind there who's got to, behind that counter, who's got to buy health insurance and has to have a, you know, a car payment and a place to live. And maybe they got a kid who wants to go to college, you know, and that's more and more middle class people not being able to do those things that were considered a birthright in America 60, 70 years ago. And slowly, year by year, it's going away. And that is immoral. The system under which we live is immoral. And people of faith, people of conscience, need to start working to change it before it's too late. Okay, off the soapbox. We started off talking about constipation. We ended up talking about economics and politics. I'm not quite done yet. I got about 4 minutes left. What else can I talk to you about? I've fired up my brother's old MacBook. It is an ancient MacBook laptop. And there's very little that it will do now. You know, you can't get on the internet. You used to be able to get on there, but now, you know, everything has so much, requires so much speed and so much memory, it just chokes on it. But I can check my email on it, and that's it. And I can't remember. I mean, there was a time that I needed it, and my brother let me use it. And I guess I still have it. I guess he didn't need it. He has a new flashy new one now. He doesn't need, you know, he doesn't need mine, or he doesn't need this old one. So about, like I said, about all I can do with it is check email. And I had it put away for a long time. I broke it out, you know, just to see what might be on, because I know he collected a lot of stuff off of iTunes and stuff, and I found a whole lot of really interesting stuff. So it's become a jukebox now. Okay, so that's some sort of scientific regression that we could put together a chart, you know, the devolution of the MacBook, of the MacBook laptop, from because it's serious. I mean, there's stuff still on there from Scott's days, my brother's days when he started working at Ohio State. And there I said my brother's name and the name of the university. He started working there. You know, his links to all the university websites and various other sites that he did business with are all on there. And as I say, they won't hook up anymore, but they're all still on there. And this, at one time, this was a serious notebook computer for serious business, and now it's a jukebox. So how did that, I mean, go through the steps of how that happened? And I think they'd be very similar to the steps you would go through for some of these houses in my neighborhood that once were, you know, wonderful houses that beautiful families lived in, and now they're crack houses. How did that happen? And what was the devolution of that? And then the ultimate devolution is when the bulldozers come and knock the house down, which happens from time to time. There's a very nice house up about three blocks from where I live. And I've seen the people come twice now looking at it and trying to strategize, I guess. But see, it's a stone house. These other houses were like older, like different, like not as, you know, sturdy. They went up a lot quicker. They were cheaper houses. And so the earth moving equipment could wreck them fairly easily. This is, you know, made out of stone and brick. It's going to be a job to take it down. So I think there's some, you know, strategizing going on. How are we going to do this? Or, you know, hoping against hope that maybe they're going to, because I've heard there's some possibility that's going to happen. They'll get some grants to get people into houses and they'll fix them out or fix them up. So I'll keep an eye on it and I will keep you posted on that one. I've had my 90-second warning. I want to thank you for tuning in tonight and listening to my nonsense. I will be back next week with 30 minutes more of nonsense for you. And I hope you will be moved to come back and join us again, and also come back and listen to some of our other programs on Blog Talk Radio with Chief Iggy and his friends, and hopefully join in the conversation. So thank you again, and have a pleasant good evening. Oop, I forgot my...